I got a lovely letter last week by a man by the name of Derry Cotter. He's got a new play called The Dowry that's running in the Cork Arts Theatre from today until the 6th inclusive. I believe that it is sold out. Let me find out. Derry, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Sold out?
Lovely to talk to you. Yes, we're sold out. And the Cork Arts Theatre is such a fantastic place to actually perform a play. If you're in the audience, you feel like you're part of what's happening. It's a fabulous setting.
Oh, you took a lot of time actually sending me this email with a load of detail on it. I was really very much impressed because it got me thinking of the laws and the customs in Ireland over the centuries of to which you can talk of. When I read your email yesterday, we even started talking around the office about Brehon law and our own laws before the English came around and imposed our laws and changed it, particularly for women. But can you talk on that? Or is it a case of that, you know, the whole play evolves around the dowry and where that came from, where women brought money or they brought, was it cattle and things like that?
Yeah, typically, Neil, the amount of a dowry was probably about one third of the value of the farm that a woman was marrying into. There wasn't a fixed amount. Now, sometimes it was paid in land, sometimes in cash, and sometimes, as you suggest there, in cattle. But it's very interesting to look at how dowries evolved in Ireland, and it goes back to in 1845, when the famine began. 45% of farm holdings were 5 acres or less. And as a consequence, the tenant farmers had to grow potatoes because they had just 5 or less acres, and to feed their families, they needed a high-calorie crop. And of course, that was a major causal factor of the famine, because once the potato crop failed, the tenant farmers had nothing else to feed their families. Now, I suppose in pre-famine Ireland, it was very much a case of Arthur Miller's All My Sons, where every male in a rural family jointly inherited an allotment of land along with his male siblings. So that, I suppose, custom was a major contributing factor to the famine. And once the famine occurred, a lot of, 2 million plus people died in the famine. We also had mass emigration. And as a consequence of the famine, we had laws passed by the British government whereby small holdings were prohibited in order to prevent a recurrence of a famine-like event. Yeah. And a consequence of the larger holdings was that only one son then inherited farms from that point onwards.
The rest then had to emigrate, didn't they? Or find work correct. In towns or go work for another farmer or something.
They did, absolutely, Neil, and work was very hard to come by. So that really was the origin of the dowry, because if the land was being handed over to the eldest son, you had a number of reasons why the bride coming in had to pay money. First of all, the retiring couple had to have some form of nest egg for their retirement. Secondly, the brothers who were non-inheriting had to, as you suggest there, they had to be set up in some way, either for to finance their immigration or to fund them in starting up a trade. As well, the daughters in the family had to have their dowry if they wanted to marry. And finally, then also, it was necessary to clear off the debts of the farm, so the young couple had a good start.
Yeah, so the dowry of the bride coming into the home to marry the son benefited many different people. It's quite complicated, really, to see how many different people are connected to a dowry. But any idea typically how much, say if it was money, how much the bride-to-be's family would have to come up with so she could marry your man?
It would be typically a third of the value of the farm they were marrying into. So if the farm was worth £3,000, the dowry typically would be about £1,000.
And for how long did dowries last then? When did they actually fall out of favour?
They probably went into the 60s, Neil. And, you know, they were a huge factor in Irish rural life right up to the end of the 50s and into the 60s. And it was often said that one dowry would marry a village, because if a woman paid a dowry into her groom's family, then that family would use the same dowry to finance the marriage of the women in that family.
Yeah, so is it like a domino effect? No, but what if it was a woman whose parents didn't have any money? This is a case that she just did. You couldn't marry without it. I mean, was there anyone marrying for love?
It's a very good question. And a woman in rural Ireland who didn't have a dowry had, I suppose, very few options. There was no employment, so chances are she'd have to emigrate, or she could go into a convent. And what some women did is having emigrated, they worked as nurses or as maids in houses, and they saved up enough money to finance their own dowry. They came back to Ireland, and then they had financed their own.
That's mental. That a woman would have to save up to get enough money to be accepted in Irish society for the tradition of a dowry. Like, it's as if she's a possession for sale.
Yeah, absolutely. And women at that time ended up having to marry men who were much older than them. So that was. And women were treated as chattels, really, in so many ways in 1950s Ireland. I mean, a woman didn't have ownership of the children's allowance book. She relied on her husband to give her something from it. A woman couldn't open a bank account. She couldn't go into a pub. If a woman had a baby at that time, she had to be churched before she could re-enter.
Now, that's an interesting one, isn't it? Churching. She couldn't go into a church for a long period of time because she was deemed to be unclean.
Correct. And she couldn't even re-enter society, so to speak.
I was said to quit work, didn't they? If they had a primary school teacher who would marry. Sorry, no job for you.
Yeah. A woman who actually got married had to resign their job if they worked in the public service and in some areas of the private sector as well. So a friend of mine was an air hostess with Aer Lingus, and she only had a working career of about 2 to 3 years. And that applied until 1973, except in the case of primary school teachers, where there was an exemption from 1958. But it was an absolutely...
Right up until, certainly, I think, even well into the 70s, somebody with any public sector job, you might be working for a government. If you were a woman, you got married, you quit work. And on top of that, isn't it fair to say that for centuries, or whatever length the dowry lasted, that a lot of the time a young woman actually didn't even have a say as to who she was marrying, right? Was it arranged by a matchmaker or somebody would be sent off to do the research on the most available man?
Yes, a matchmaker was a key player, actually, Neil, in Ireland of the 1940s and 50s, because the government, under pressure from the Catholic Church, had passed a law in 1935 banning dancing at the crossroads, banning dancing in kitchens if they were public dances. So as a consequence, people had to go to parochial halls, which were supervised by the Catholic Church, And people didn't have many ways of meeting. So as a consequence, the matchmaker became an even more important player in marriage stakes.
In the sense that sometimes she would marry a man as a young girl or a young woman who could be 10 or 15 or 20 or maybe even older than that, much older than her anyway.
Absolutely. And one of the key reasons for that, Neil, was that the man she was marrying had to wait until his father died before he could inherit the farm.
And if she married him and he inherited the farm, right? And she's married to him and she's brought the dowry and everything. And say her husband dies, what happens then?
Well, but one of the things that used to happen if her husband passed away early in their marriage is that she would be sent back with her dowry to her own people. And that would happen as well in some cases where she didn't conceive a child. She would be returned to her people. So
good
things
God.
Like that were...
Faulty goods, like a commodity.
Yes, very much a commodity, Neil. Absolutely, yeah.
When you think of it, you know, there was a marital rape exemption. Do you remember that? Where for many, many years, I don't know, up until what? Could it have been the 80s? I'm not sure. A husband couldn't be legally prosecuted for raping his wife because marriage implied sexual consent.
As in, it is my conjugal right,
even if she didn't want sex. Isn't it appalling?
Absolutely dreadful. Yeah, absolutely dreadful. And women as well, prior to the 1965 Succession Act, they had no legal right to inherit the property of their husband. So, for example, a good friend of mine, his father passed away when he was less than a year old, and he became the actual person who inherited the farm. His mother wasn't able to inherit it, you know, primarily because she was a female.
And is all this playing out in the play, The Dowry, at the Cork Arts Theatre, this entire story we've just discussed?
Yeah, a lot of it is, Neil, where you have enormous pressure within the household where the only son wants to take over the farm, but his father, you know, he isn't going to hand it over until he's holding the candle in his hand, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
And the daughter in the family is dependent on the dowry coming into the house from her brother's
wife-to-be, yeah.
Correct, in order to fund her marriage to a guy that she has met up
it's
with.
It's fascinating. And do dowries exist anywhere in the world now? Or was this, I mean, if I remember correctly, India was a country where certainly large amounts of money used to change hands.
Yes, and dowries were actually banned in India in 1961, but they still continue to exist in rural areas of India, quite widespreadly in rural areas of India in the present day as well.
Amazing. So the treatment of women left an awful lot to be desired under English law that was imposed upon us when we had Breton law that preceded that, and women were very, very powerful under Breton law. In fact, they had much more rights and much more power and much more authority than men, and they were stripped of all of that, yeah?
They lost a huge amount of power, absolutely, under British law. And, you know, it's frightening to think the degree to which women's rights were subjugated to men.
Listen, best of luck with the play. I'm so delighted that it sold out for you. Maybe the Cork Arts Theatre might think of bringing you back again or extending the run, but well done on a sellout. It's going to be fantastic for anybody that has tickets. In fairness to you,
Derry. Thanks very much, Neil. And it's a play, actually, that young people, I think, would benefit from seeing, because an awful lot of people out, you know, younger than our generation have no awareness of this type of issue. And if another drama group would have an interest, I'd be delighted to actually speak to them as well.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of education out there that, you know, can be learned from this whole area.
And they could put on your production in the future. Well said, Derry. Do stay in touch, though. It's just been a pleasure talking to you, and I appreciate you taking the time, all right?
Thanks so much, Neil.
There
Thank you very
Just
much for having me on.
Not at all. There you have it, lads. A little walk down memory lane and a walk down Irish history for you.